And we're speaking now with two of our local journalists. We're talking with Anissa Keith with the Bonner County Daily Bee. Anissa, thank you for being with us.
Good to be here, Chris. Thank you for having me.
And we're also speaking with Lindsay Cabert-Carey with the Sandpoint Reader. Lindsay, thank you for being here.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to throw out a warning shout to our listeners is that we are recording this over Zoom and we're getting kind of mixed results. So if things go warbly, hang in there with us and hopefully Zoom will behave for our interview this time. So this is our annual year in review where we talk about some of the biggest stories that happened during the course of the past year. And of course, as we air this, it's actually going to be December 30th. So we're going to be the next to last day of 2021. And then if we have a little bit of time, we're going to talk about things that we think may be coming up of note that people want to watch for in the news in 2022. So we're going to go around the table and let's go ahead and start with you, Lindsay. Why don't you tell us one of the stories you think was big in the past year?
Yeah, so just before I came on with you, I did my annual mad dash of flipping through all the news pages of every reader since January. So I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, but something that I realized was kind of officially launched in January was the governor put out his plan for the vaccine rollout. And it feels like this year went fast, but it also feels like a million years ago that we were talking about that. And so I'm just revisiting, you know, the governor's intention with prioritizing essential workers, prioritizing people over 65, and how that by the springtime really quickly became like, okay, everybody who wants vaccination against COVID-19 can get it. So that I feel like was huge in my coverage of the pandemic. And I kind of forgot that launched the beginning of the year right after the holidays.
Yeah, well, and that was, you know, the whole COVID thing was on, I'm sure, all of our lists this time. I think we came into 2021 with this great hope that the vaccine was going to roll out and COVID would go away. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way.
yeah.
Anissa, what did you see in terms of COVID impacts on the community once you got into town?
Well, once I got into town, I thought it was quite interesting compared to where I came from, just east in Montana. It was what I sometimes would describe as a culture shock. Even though they're both very conservative states, Idaho is very much more adamant, with an emphasis, I would say, on personal rights, while still also acknowledging the existence of COVID. Just building off of what Lindsay said, the pandemic was our number one story of big stories for the year. And like citizens and local officials and legislators retaliated against those things. Bonner County passed an anti-mandate resolution that had the support of the community, but had to be sent back two times because they wanted to perfect it. They just either thought the language wasn't strong enough or that it was worded incorrectly. So it was really interesting and fascinating to have a front seat to that.
Yeah, I also noted the commissioner's constitutional county anti-mandate resolution on my list of stories. Something I found really compelling, I know you said it had the support of the community. I think that's true to a point. I think there is a very vocal community that attends those meetings, that gets involved in those ways. Something I thought was really interesting that Commissioner Jeff Connolly said early in the process, when he initially was pretty opposed to Commissioner Bradshaw bringing that forward. He saw it as a political act because Bradshaw is running for governor in 2022. He noted that it seemed like Bradshaw just trying to draw support from people who agreed with that stance. Connolly had noted, you know, I believe it was in one of these hearings. I don't know. He said it before, but he has acknowledged that like there are a lot of constituents that have these beliefs and there's a lot of constituents who don't, and they're not as vocal at these meetings. And so, yeah, that was a really interesting focal point just on how the pandemic has shown itself in our county's politics this year.
And of course, our vaccination rate remains well below the national average here. And the most recent number I have, these numbers are pretty hard to pin down, to tell you the truth. But if you look at the Panhandle Health District website, they're showing 40% of our eligible population. Although I think eligible population now goes down to age five.
Yeah.
Is vaccinated. And I think that compares with, you know, close to 70% nationally. So I think we're seeing it expressed in the fact that people, that, you know, that there is a great deal of resistance to COVID, both vaccinations and masking and precautions. And you certainly don't see it when you're in large groups around town. There's very few people that are wearing masks here, which is now a recommended procedure with the Omicron virus kicking things back up. So, yeah, unfortunately, I think we could all say it's going to continue to be a big story in this next year as we, as people wrangle about what the right response is to the COVID crisis. And who knows where that's going to take us. Mm-hmm. So with that, Anissa, I'm sure we all had that at the top of our list, the whole COVID treatment, but what would be another big story in your opinion that happened in our neck of the woods in 2021?
Yeah, I think this actually segues really nice into our number two story of the year, which was centered on the subject of growth and housing issues in Bonner County and how much of a topic that has been with legislators, commissioners and citizens. It boosted the economy and a thriving tourism industry paired with the looser COVID restrictions caused a lot of people to move here and a lot of tourism money to come through the area. So that's caused a lot of growth and impact to the way our cities and towns are having to respond to that. There's higher rents and higher housing costs. And a lot of employers are having a really hard time finding employees to work because they can't afford to live here. There have been a couple local projects, organizations formed like Project 7B, and they kind of are a grassroots organization that cause people to interact with each other, to have planning issues tackled and like have some participation in that, as well as keep Bonner County rural. And their main aim is to restrict urban sprawl. I'm sure, Lindsay, you've written about them before.
Yeah, near the top of my list and also among my predictions for the next year, I think that community involvement and, like you said, grassroots movements, keeping an eye on land use issues will continue to ramp up because of the rising population, more money coming into the area, that sort of thing. Going into the new year, I'm actually working on right now, looking at all of these lands issues that continue to ramp up, going to the commissioners, rezones, use permits, things like that. And looking back on the previous year, you know, we've just got heightened involvement in issues like there's a proposed marina in the Trussell Creek area that saw a lot of pushback, things like that. Agreed. I think that that'll continue to be a big story, and it certainly was big over the past year.
Yeah, and one more note on that is Schweitzer Mountain has had an especially rough time finding employee housing up there on the hill. They purchased the old Huckleberry Retirement Center and have done some significant renovations on it to have some housing for groups of employees. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in fact, Lighthouse was looking to do the same sort of thing as do some more workforce housing. And I believe there was a zone change request on that. You guys may know this better than I, Lindsay.
Yeah. I mean, Zach covers the city, our editor in chief, Zach Hagedon, but I am familiar. I believe that the city council ended up denying that application. However, I believe it was recommended by P&Z, but denied by the council. I'm not an expert on that, but I did find that interesting because it came kind of on the tails of this big story that I was really proud to work on with Zach this year. It was Where Are All the Workers? We did, I believe, a 5-part series And it just exploring all these different factors that have led to the labor shortage throughout the summer, and leading into, like Anissa said, winter, because we do attract a lot of people to the mountain in the winter. But if anyone is interested in reading that, I did compile it all into a PDF at sandpointreader.com. It's on the left-hand side, and it says, "Where are all the workers?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big series of stories that the Reader did this year. And that particular, topic, it's so broad because, as Anissa, as you started out, was growth, right? So growth is driving the problem with workforce housing, and it's driving all the contested land use issues we're seeing. And it's, it's driving a lot of social changes here in Sandpoint. There's no question about that. And I think we can all say, yeah, that's going to continue on in 2022, because it's not something that has any kind of easy solution to it. So, okay, my turn to bring up a big story of the year. And even though it wasn't a general election year, we had a couple elections that were a bit feistier than you might expect, actually. In the spring, we had special district elections, specifically for the East Bonner County Library District Board of Trustees, and then also for the Pend Oreille Hospital District Board of Trustees. And these are elections that in past years, they've had no candidates even, and nobody runs. They end up getting filled by appointments because, they're not very high profile, even though they're very important. Both our hospital and our library are key institutions in this town. In this particular case, the East Bonner County Library had, I think, four candidates running for two open seats, and it was pretty well contested. The incumbents ended up winning there, and the more conservative candidates there did not win. And then the Pend Oreille Hospital District, actually, there were five candidates going for two seats there, and once again, the incumbents won there as well. But it was interesting because we were seeing these contested races coming from the more conservative side of the community, people actually that have moved here more recently as well.
Yeah, I think it speaks well to this growing trend that particularly staunchly conservative candidates and people in the community, they understand that change starts at the bottom, that's the school district, that's the hospital board, et cetera, et cetera. I respect that. I think especially as a local reporter, you come to understand that the decisions that affect your lives and your neighbors' lives and your family's lives are the decisions made on those lower profile boards. And that's the perfect segue into what I think is going to be the biggest story of 2022, and that is the May primary. It is going to be bonkers. Like, covering that is going to be so fun and so interesting. Everyone from the county commissioners to all the way up to the state level, it's going to be very interesting, I would say.
I agree right there entirely.
Yeah. In our second election kind of gave us a little bit of a preview of that, maybe. We had the city and school elections in November. So the special district elections were in the spring. The city and school elections were in the fall. And we saw like a banner number. I don't know if it's a record number. We saw a banner number of candidates that were contesting for how many seats were there? There were three of the six city council seats were up for election, and there were mm-hmm. eight candidates running for those. And another thing that was of interest in the fall was the city of Sandpoint had a ballot question on proposing a 1% local option sales tax on purchases made in the city. That got an awful lot of comment and feedback and debate. And that although a majority of the voters voted for it, it required a 60% approval to pass, and it did not. It got about 53% of the voters approved of that, and that was specifically to fund improvements to city parks and the constructions of sidewalks in town.
Yeah, and that came on the heels of the county asking for voter permission back in May for the, I'm going to not use the correct term unless I find it. What was it called? Special revenue bond, $8.7 million to improve our county solid waste, which is, you know, according to all the reporting I've done, like severely past due for an updated overhaul. And that did end up passing despite, I believe it was the Bonner County Republican Central Committee recommended voting against it. Commissioner Dan McDonald ended up running an op-ed in the Reader urging people to vote for it, because I believe they did like a 5-year fix back in the 90s to improve our waste transfer station, and it's been 25 years. And so that was interesting to see the support come for that. And then the city, which saw people from all sides of the aisle recommending denial of the local option tax, ended up failing.
Anissa, I don't know, did you cover the local option tax?
That was not my beat, but I did keep my own personal beat on it, attention on it. And just picking up of what Lindsay said, the fact that Dan McDonald essentially like countered the RNC's stance on it, coming from someone who is very, to his core, conservative person, I think it just speaks to exactly where, not necessarily where people's loyalties lie, but what they really value as important. I found it really interesting that the funding, the local option tax, wasn't passed, if you ask me. Sandpoint likes to participate a lot, whether it's in government or in the community, and like, you know, frankly, just chilling. So that's what I picked up on it.
Yeah, I think that there were a couple of factors going against the city of Sandpoint local option tax. One was the city was waiting to see what the results of the census would be, because they weren't sure if they were going to get kicked up. Our city was going to be, identified with a population higher than 10,000. And the local option tax in Idaho is only available to resort cities of less than 10,000 population. Mm-hmm. So the city was waiting until pretty late to get the census results in and see if they could even propose a local option tax. And by the time they got it rolling, and it was like September, so they only had a couple months prior to the election in order to talk about, you know, what the tax would be used for. And a lot of people just felt that was too hastily put together. That's some of the comments that I saw out there. And then we had that banner number of individuals that ran for city council. Were there any surprises on your guys' behalf as to who won? You know, Joel Espero, who was an incumbent, won. Justin Dick, the owner of Trinity City Beach, won. And Jason Welker, he's been involved in various local groups, won. Those were the three winners. The other five didn't make it. And one of those was the incumbent, John Darling, get reelected there. I don't know if, were there any surprises for you in how that election went?
Well, again,
go ahead, Anissa. Yes, go ahead.
I am the county reporter, so I didn't necessarily keep that close of attention to the city council. And still being so fresh in the community, I'm not familiar with the characters as much as I imagine the two of you are. But I did meet a couple of the candidates at commissioners' meetings when it was getting pretty close to the election. A lot of the people who would run would go up and speak during public comment. And it tracked as a kind of inflammatory speech to me, like saying, Fritz Moore saying that they would throw him out of the commissioner's meeting, even though he was kind of cheering on Dan McDonald a couple of
times. Yeah, I remember that meeting very well. That was my first introduction to Fritz Moore. And I found it kind of compelling that he was really upset about something that they were discussing. Essentially, he was under the impression that the commissioners were not, you know, representing their constituents, and, you know, well enough, not being, not emphasizing personal freedoms enough, I imagine. And then he was like, inciting the crowd to be upset that they were going to throw him out, and Dan told him there's the door, and then Fritz was like, we need different people, vote for me, and Jeff was like, this is a county meeting, sir, and I was like, oh goodness gracious. And moving on,
he didn't even throw him out, he just went and he stood back by the door.
Interesting. Yeah, I watched that one on YouTube. I imagine you were you there in person?
Yeah, I was sitting in a really close chair to that.
good yeah. But yeah, I think as far as the city council race goes, you know, the city is Zach's beat, but, you know, we work pretty closely on things here. And, I, you know, honestly, that race could have been anybody's. I imagined that Joel would maintain his seat, because he seems to be popular on both sides. You know, he stands a middle ground on a lot of issues. And Jason Welker, having been involved in planning and zoning, if I'm not mistaken, with that being such a hot issue right now, and him being knowledgeable, I thought that could propel him to win. And Justin, you know, he's involved in a lot of local issues. If you don't know Justin Dick and you've lived here for a while, like, you know, he's involved in a lot of things. And so it didn't surprise me that those guys won, but I was totally prepared for anyone to make their way into the council with how things have been going the last few years.
Pretty hard to read the tea leaves in these elections. And I'm going to mention one more election before we move on from this topic, and that is the school district election. They actually had three seats up for election, and the incumbent, Lonnie Williams, was unopposed. The incumbent, Kerry Kelly, did not run for his zone, but the only candidate to file was Tanya Sherman. So those two weren't even on the ballot because they were uncontested. But in the third, the Zone 2 trustee, it was the incumbent Gary Suppiger versus Jalen Peters. Now, Jalen had run in spring for a position on the library district board. And although he lost, that is a county-wide vote, or excuse me, district-wide, since the East Bonner County Library only covers the eastern part of the county. But in the school election, it was only his zone that votes for that Zone 2 trustee. And he beat Gary by actually a pretty handy margin. What was your take on that? Lindsay, you're probably more familiar with these. And then we'll ask Anissa.
My take on that is that there are voters who are eager for change. And with the school district in particular, and with education, with COVID and with the Black Lives Matter movement gaining steam in 2020, there are people who want to ensure that people on the school board have a hand in making sure that their children are being educated in a way that they see fit. And Jalen, you know, he came out like very strongly against the library's mask mandate. That was, I believe, most of his platform for running for the library board. And so, you know, there are people who are looking for that in their candidates. And I don't tend to cover the school district very closely, because in my other life, I am a teacher in the school district. but then again, you know, it's more reason for me to keep a really close watch on these things. And, you know, I think that it wasn't surprising. In my opinion, it wasn't surprising.
Anissa, did you have any read on that? I don't know if you cover schools.
Yeah. Well, I don't cover the schools, but Lindsay was making a really good point about how people are running for these positions because they are wanting to participate and affect change in where they live. And I got to say, with these elections, I think it's really bringing to the fore and in very close detail the social pressures that a lot of people are feeling and how strongly they feel about them. And I think it started a discussion that has gotten way heated and sometimes disrespectful. But at the end of the day, I don't feel that anyone wakes up hoping for the misfortune of other people. And so we're all just trying to lift ourselves up. I think the key is to make sure we rise together.
Yeah, that election was interesting to me for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, Gary has been involved with education things for decades, actually. His children all attended the Lake Pend Oreille School District schools and graduated from here and went on to higher education, and, you know, successful launch of his kids out of this school district. Jalen has been in town, I don't think much more than 10 years. His children, he has school age children right now. They're not in the school district, which I thought was a pretty interesting thing that he would be even running for the school board since he's doesn't have kids in the school district. But as he explained it, you know, he wants to give back to, you know, his time in these local decision making groups. And I think what we saw in that particular race was some of these defining cultural issues, like critical race theory was an issue in that race. Critical race theory, even though they essentially had the same position on it, Gary and Jalen, both of them were, you know, very said they're totally opposed to teaching, you know, critical race theory in our schools. Gary's point, however, was it's not being taught now. It never has been taught. And it's, you know, it's just kind of a false issue in this race. But that's a hot button issue around the whole country. And I think that sort of thing, these cultural issues are really affecting some of our local races now in new ways. And I'm sure we'll see more of that going forward. I want to swing back to elections when we get back to prognosticating, because as Lindsay, as you pointed out, it's definitely going to be a big issue in the coming year. But we'll dissect that a little bit more. Okay, Lindsay, you're up. Give us a story you think bears remark upon.
You know what? Because I discussed it in detail last year when I did this interview with you, and predicted that we may have some further outcomes. The Bonner County versus Festival at Sandpoint / City of Sandpoint issue regarding the guns at Festival at Sandpoint. Just to catch everyone up to make sure that we're all on the same page, the Festival at Sandpoint, I believe in 2018 was where the issue arose. War Memorial Field being a public property owned by the City of Sandpoint, the Bonner County Commissioners brought forth concerns that they, because it's public property, had no right to ban guns. And that has been a longstanding rule with the festival. You know, your purses are checked, et cetera, et cetera. So that, you know, the initial lawsuit between Bonner County and the City of Sandpoint resolved in September 2020. And so that was definitely one of my big stories of 2020. And the judge ruled that the county had no standing and therefore the suit was null and void. However, what rose out of that was another lawsuit from the private citizens who were turned away from the festival in 2018 for bringing in guns. Was it 2018 or 2019?
2019, I think.
2019, still in. Yeah. And that suit was actually resolved in 2021. I don't have it noted exactly, but one of the first developments was that the county was actually going to appeal their suit. And they announced in March that they would no longer because the sheriff pulled out. And the argument was essentially, you know, the sheriff is violating the Constitution if he puts someone in jail for taking their gun on public property. But the sheriff, without, I don't think, ever explaining to me why, he decided to drop out before the appeal. So the appeal was canceled. But the private citizen suit was ruled on this year. And the judge, again, ruled in favor of the City of Sandpoint and the festival. And so that's just been interesting to watch. It also, looking back now after what's happened in 2021, the relationship between the county commissioners and the sheriff continues to become more and more interesting. We see that right now with the Sandpoint Ice Arena debacle, in which the sheriff is arguing the county is giving land away to a nonprofit that was intended for use by Bonner County law enforcement. The commissioners, particularly Dan McDonald, will say that there is nothing in writing that promised that land to the law enforcement. And yeah, that was a lot. I'm saying a lot right now, but
you know, well, funny. You know. These things totally bleed over into other issues, right?
So, you know, can you tell I'm a nerd for my job?
Anissa.
Yes. The sheriff came out with a couple different press releases on his Facebook page, making the claims that Lindsay was describing earlier. And I find it interesting that Facebook is used to distribute information more than us as outlets, especially through a government office. Do you have any remarks on that, Lindsay?
I find it really interesting. It's funny because half of me being a young millennial, you know, I love the streamlining of information. I find it really intriguing. But as an old salty journalist in my soul, I'm like, man, this never would have happened back in the day. Like, look at them breaking news by themselves on their Facebook pages. But there is an appeal in them having full control over what goes out to the public. However, it does present an issue for us in, you know, making sure we distill this information into the most important pieces. You know, part of the role of news is to help people digest the bigger issues and see how they all fit together, all these relationships and political maneuverings. And so I think it's cool because I'm like, oh, sweet. You know, the sheriff put something on Facebook. I'll have something for the news page this week. But then getting comment from the commissioners, making sure that everyone has their say and that what they're saying, you know, a huge part of our job is holding people accountable. They can't just say something is this without us confirming that with the appropriate authorities. And so, yes, while it is kind of frustrating at times, it's also kind of cool, I guess.
Yes, and especially what you were saying is the second press release that he posted about, it was like the sheriff's office land. There was some factually incorrect information in that press release. So while I'm happy that, you know, people can get information faster, from the horse's mouth, so to speak, it may not be completely true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the media ecosystem we live within now. The internet's done some amazing things in terms of access to information, but you know, word of warning to everybody that uses the internet, check your sources and just see if they're going to be prone to bias or inaccuracies. So
everyone out there, fact check this episode.
Yeah, better be fact checking us.
Yeah, we could be fact checked as well. And who knows, we'll probably get a couple things wrong. It's nature dealing with hundreds of facts. And he said, did you have another story you wanted to identify as one of the big ones for the year?
Yes, this was a very devastating fire season for the county. And there was a drought that helped emphasize that. One of the things that really stood out to me just reviewing this, June of 2021 was hotter than 2020's August. And because of that, there was a lot of reactions that the county had to do and a lot of help that we had to call upon. Because we did foresee it as being probably a very bad fire season. And then we ended up having to call in type 3 fire teams of the National Guard. So, you know, Idaho was prepared, but it was still almost too much to handle. It was the hottest year in 126 years. It was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. June was amazingly hot. And we're starting to see some apparent, you know, climate change effects in our county, no question. And the fires are just one expression of it. The stream flows, the snowpacks, everything else are starting to be impacted by a warmer, drier summer that we're getting.
And the severe storms we see when cold and warm fronts meet one another. I live in Hope, and the wind has been devastating the last couple of years. You know, a windstorm comes in and you're just prepared for anything.
Yeah.
We've lost a lot of trees, big trees. But yeah, and with the fires, Anissa mentioned, the fireworks debate that happened around the 4th of July, shout out to everybody who did the right thing and saved their fireworks for this week on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
Well, let's see. It's my turn to throw out something. And we've really touched on what I consider all the really biggest stories around here. One story I thought was significant, though, was the Pandas got a new managing director now. And the Pandas, you know, kind of one of the main institutions in our town, I think, for the performing arts, certainly is. And that's Veronica Knowlton. She was working for the North Idaho Fair, recently moved. I think she moved to Kokalala, so she's in our town now. And hopefully we'll see some really cool things come with the Panda. You interviewed Veronica, I know.
Yes, Lindsay. I did. I did a piece for Sandpoint Magazine this year. And we've also covered Veronica's new appointment in The Reader. But no, she's been really neat to talk to. She seems really enthusiastic about, you know, rejuvenating the Panda. The pandemic has been hard on everyone who works in performing arts or anything involving gathering people in spaces.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing what the future holds for the Panda. I think that there's the enthusiasm behind it. It's just, you know, making sure that, and I've been preaching this in my personal life for the last few years, but, you know, be intentional with where you spend your time and your dollars. Because if you value something like the Panda, or you value our small businesses, or you value things that the nonprofits around here do, make sure that you dedicate your time. And if you have it, your money to those kinds of things. And I know it's kind of weird to hear that from a journalist, and I do take great pride in being unbiased in my reporting, but I think that as a lifetime local, I'm not afraid to speak up and say, you can't be sad when something disappears if you didn't do anything to help it stick around.
Hey, words of wisdom from a young person. I'll tell you what, let's run in, let's turn our focus on what's coming up in 2022. We kind of touch on a couple things, but before we do that, Anissa or Lindsay, anything you want to mention as a big story or a significant story? Quick, like.
My last thing that I think we should all keep an eye out in the year, but also that was really cool to cover this year, the Big Sky Passenger Rail Authority out of Montana getting support from the Bonner County Commissioners. There's this renewed desire to get Amtrak back through the southern part of Montana leading up into Sandpoint. And there's all these predictions about what kind of like economic viability that could bring. And plus it would just be really cool. And with the, you know, investments happening at a federal level into transportation alternatives throughout the country, it looks like they really are gaining steam, for lack of a better term.
Well, the infrastructure bill may provide the funding to bring a second Amtrak route up into Sandpoint, which would be pretty cool. Yeah,
totally.
And you said anything you wanted to mention before we talk about the future?
Yeah, actually, this is a great segue into talking about the future. Water adjudication has begun in the Panhandle. And this is not necessarily, like, this is all about water rights. It's not necessarily that, like, it's your water and no one else can have it, or it's their water. This is simply holding your place in line, that if a lawsuit were to happen, you can have these court documents that have already been ruled upon that holds your spot to have water on your property. And there's a lot of caveats that go along with it, but the application process is open and the website is very intuitive. And this is probably going to be going on for the next 2 years.
Mm. And does this relate to people that have wells as well?
So this is about use and benefit. It's not necessarily about groundwater. It's about diverting surface water. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily a well thing.
Right. Okay. All right. Heads up, everybody. If you're using surface water, you want to make sure that you maintain, keep your place in line there. Okay, let's talk for just a few minutes now about what's coming up in 2022. And I think we all already have said that this next election is going to be a wild and wacky one. And in our state, it's a lot of the action really happens in the primary rather than the general election, because the state tilts so heavily to the Republican side. Lindsay, why don't you go first and what your take on what 2022 may hold?
Well, you know, I'm not one to make predictions on these elections because Lord knows what's going to happen. But I do find it really compelling that, you know, up north we have quite a few candidates making their names known. Commissioner Steve Bradshaw is running for governor. He was recently absent from a commissioner meeting because he was down in Boise. Not sure if it was on or off the record, but I heard over the YouTube speaker that he was doing some electioneering. So I believe he was doing some interviews, some radio things. And so I think that'll be interesting to watch. He's been a very vocal critic of Governor Brad Little for the past year and a half. So, you know, he's right here. He is our county commissioner, and I'll be interested to see how that progresses. But, you know, otherwise, I'm having a hard time keeping track, honestly. I've been trying to just get through New Year's, and then maybe I'll think about the May primary.
Okay. Anissa, do you have any observations on the primary?
Yes. I'm not as familiar as the characters with the characters as you or Lindsay are, but I just got to say that, like I said earlier, the social pressures that a lot of people are feeling are only going to be coming to the surface even more. And you were right. This state falls very heavily to the Republican side, but that's not to be confused with the fact that they agree on most of the big issues within the party's platform. And I think this will be very interesting to learn exactly where they're going as a party, or if there's going to be some very obvious distinctions within.
Yeah. I got to mention that Steve Bradshaw is running for governor, but so is Shelby Ronstadt, the Sandpoint mayor, and on the Democratic side, which is pretty interesting that Sandpoint has managed to produce two gubernatorial candidates are going to be on the ballot in for the primary election. Now, Bradshaw, of course, he's running against an incumbent, so it's a much higher lift for him to prevail in the primary. And there's several other, Janice McGeachin, Ammon Bundy, some other high-profile names that are running in the Republican primary. But Shelby, right now, in the Democratic primary, there's only one other announced candidate. And it looks to me like the kind of the Democratic infrastructure is behind Shelby there. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do see Shelby in the general election. You know, you got to see how the primary pans out for him. Another very interesting thing for us here locally is that the state's going through its every 10-year redistricting, and we've had this really kind of weird map where all of Sagal, Kokalala, even parts of Clarkfork, I think, are in this huge District 7 currently. Mm-hmm. And that stretches all the way down to Riggins. It's like 280 miles long or something. The new map would bring those parts of Bonner County back into District 1. But it's going to move Heather Scott over by Blanchard into District 2. And that map is being contested, so it's a little premature to say how that might go. But as it stands right now, Heather Scott would not be a District 1 representative unless she elected to move into District 1 in some fact. You know, she'd actually have to change her residence. But on the other hand, she'll be in the new District 2, wouldn't have any incumbents in it. It's an all new district, but she would be the incumbent, I guess, in District 2. So
yeah, I am interested to see how that pans out for her. There has been some, I guess you could call it scuttlebutt. I think that's what the guys I work with in the office next door would say. I think that, you know, it's possible that she may find another route to enact her political change. You know, if she decides that this maybe, you know, she doesn't want to relocate to District 1, doesn't want to maintain her position in District 2, there is opportunity, as we mentioned, to enact change on lower levels. And I wonder if she would make that move. I don't know if she
would. Like maybe county commissioner.
Maybe county commissioner.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out and how the whole primary election is going to pan out with these divisions that Anissa mentioned. Okay. What's another thing to look for in 2022, Anissa, in your opinion?
Well, we had a Sandpoint man arrested in connection with the insurrection. And I thought that was rather fascinating. I suppose that's not necessarily looking forward to 2022, but there are going to be continuous court cases related to the insurrection that happened on January 6th, which, believe it or not, was in 2021.
Yeah, that's right. This year that we're still in. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
It seems ages ago, but it wasn't. No.
Yeah. Otherwise, like, we have a lot of things that kind of came to a close in 2021 that have been lasting over the last several years, a cold case, some sentencings that have been in the works for a while. And, you know, honestly, a lot of other court cases with some pretty prolific suspects that will be continuing to move down the line in the year to come. So lots of interesting characters up here.
Lindsay, you want to mention anything else you think will be big in 2022 or people should watch for?
I'm gonna say it, and then maybe I don't know. I've been doing this interview for, I feel like Zach may have done it a couple years ago, but this is at least like my fourth time doing this interview with you guys. And every time I'm either talking about what happened with the Newport Silicon Smelter or predicting that something may come, I will admit I have been so caught up in Bonner County things that I have slacked on covering Ponderay County over in Washington. I have not been up on their comp plan changes, which I think were supposed to happen in 2020, but have been drug out. Obviously, a comp plan is a big deal. But there, you know, in Washington, spot rezoning is not allowed. And so in order for the silicon smelter to be built, it was going to require a zoning overhaul, which would have to happen in the comp plan. So people who are against building the smelter were keeping a close watch on that. And I gotta say, like, if it's gonna come back, it's gonna come back in 2022. So I'm gonna keep an eye on that. I think everyone else should too. And then I also know they were discussing looking at shoreline setback code in Bonner County during 2021. It ended up being pushed out, but some issues out in Boyer Slough, et cetera, brought these to the forefront. And I spoke with planning director Milton Allerton, and he said that they will be looking at shoreline code in the coming months. This was a while ago, and so I'm going to check in with him. I imagine that will rear its head in 2022, and that affects everybody because we all care about our water resources, and we all want to keep an eye on, you know, how are people who have waterfront property able to utilize that property? Yeah. Go ahead, Anissa.
Thank you for mentioning that. I also spoke with planning director Milton Allerton, and there has been a lot of talk about the code or surrounding minor land divisions. And I feel like that's only going to play out even more because the planning department is saying that the loophole is closed. Project 7B and Keep Bonner County Rural are saying it is not. So I feel like that clash is going to kind of escalate, if not completely come to a head.
Yeah, I think the entire concept of being able to divide land in succession, you know, it is still possible, and I'm sure I will get phone calls if I'm incorrect, but I believe it is still possible to use a minor land division and then on top of that, a short plat. And you can divide land pretty far down with those different mechanisms. And so you're right, that will continue to be an issue, especially for people who are interested in limiting that urban sprawl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll just echo that. I mean, that was on my list of, well, after COVID and elections, the big thing is going to be continued, you know, growing pains, dealing with the growth we're experiencing, the soaring real estate and housing costs, these planning issues, which is should theoretically be helping us manage our growth, are very contentious right now. So that's probably a pretty easy thing to predict is going to continue in 2022. And I did want to mention on the smelter, the interesting thing there is, well, we're affected because although the smelter is in would be in Newport, and that's downriver from us, wouldn't affect our waters here, but we are it's upwind from us, so we tend to get wind that comes from the west there, and that has a lot of our Bonner County residents concerned about it. And that's one issue where people that are very conservative and liberal people tend to be agreeing, as far as I can tell, is that they have a lot of grave reservations about the smelter.
Yeah, that definitely united people on both sides from what I could tell in the last few years.
Kind of the rare thing that does that, I guess.
Yeah, the old smelter.
So, okay. Well, we are about out of time. And Anissa, Lindsay, any last word you want to throw in?
No, thank you for the opportunity to look back on the year. Feels like it happened in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, it sure does.
Continue to stand up for what you believe is right. Be vocal, because a lot of other people are being vocal. So now's the time.
Okay. Well, Anissa Keith with the Bonner County Daily Bee and Lindsay Cabert-Carey with the Sandpoint Reader, thank you for taking time to give us this good look at what's happened and what might come.
Thank you, Chris.